You're about to listen to the newest family member of SeavillePodcast.com. It's Dr. Tripp Stewart from Greenbrier Emergency Animal Hospital here in Charlottesville. Dr. Tripp Stewart will give you tips and information you need that can help for your pet safety. Greenbrier Emergency Animal Hospital is open 365 days a year, including 24-hour coverage on all major holidays.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Tripp Stewart from Greenbrier Emergency Animal Hospital here with another podcast. I hope you are enjoying these and finding them helpful. Last week or a couple weeks ago, depending on when these are published, I asked people to submit ideas on Facebook for different podcasts. And believe it or not, we got an idea person, a volunteer to submit some ideas. So thank you, Valerie Barker, for a couple of your ideas. I'm going to cover her questions now. She asked me a couple of them. One, what about snake bites? Well, we've done a podcast about snake bites in the past, and I've got a blog on the website on www.greenbrier-emergency.com. But her specific question is, what do you do with snake bites 1 or 2 hours before you can get to a vet? So you're hiking in the woods, your dog's walking in the leaves, and a snake bites your dog. So there's only really two snakes in this area to truly worry about. One is a copperhead and the other is a rattlesnake. Rattlesnakes are much rarer and much more serious. And the only answer I can give you for a rattlesnake is rush to the vet. It's the same answer for a copperhead, but I'm going to talk about it more as a copperhead. I would think you can do the same exact treatment for a rattlesnake. So this is for both. What you want to do is make sure not to give the dog any medications, because there's really nothing you're going to be hiking with that's going to help that dog. With the exception, if you happen to have some tramadol, that would be a painkiller. Other than that, don't give any non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, Advil, Tylenol, Rimadyl, any of the dog ones or the human ones. I wouldn't give any of those. They're counterindicated because of clotting issues, and they're just not the treatment of choice. I would probably say don't give any Benadryl. Benadryl's gotten no real help in this situation, nor do steroids. So if you have prednisone, which, you know, these are some things that people carry with them, I probably wouldn't give that either. I would use something I'm going to make up real quick, which is the three C's: cold compress, compassion, and carrying the dog out of there. Cold compresses cannot hurt. It's not a bad treatment for almost any kind of traumatic injury. Just apply a cold compress to the area. If the dog won't tolerate it, then don't worry about it. Compassion, it's gonna hurt. That snake bite area is gonna hurt. Treat it like you would treat a wound that you, your kids, your family, your friends would get. So you wanna like clean it out, use some antiseptic, flush it out, put a little bandage on it, and treat it as if it was going to be extremely painful. Ginger. Carry them out. Don't make the dog walk on a bad leg. If a snake bit a leg, don't make the dog walk out on it. If you can help, try to carry the dog out. If a snake bit him on the neck or face, dog's going to be super painful. It's going to have a hard time breathing potentially, so you don't need to have that dog get into any kind of respiratory problems by huffing and puffing. I would say that, you know, the number one thing to do is probably clean that wound out. I would use some diluted betadine, which is going to be about 1 to 20 betadine with water. I would flush the wound as best you could. I'd use some sterile saline or water to flush afterwards. If you just have drinking water, that'll do just fine. I'd take some kind of padding and wrap it and cover it and then start from there. So snake bites, for the most part, are rush to a vet. That's the real answer, unfortunately. But in the meantime, remember, it's painful and gets infected. The next question she had was, what do you do about pad lacerations in the same scenario? You're hiking in the woods and your dog gets, you know, a rock or a piece of glass that cuts his pad. Well, these bleed and bleed and bleed, and that's why most people are scared of them, because it's just it's like Freddy Krueger came into the woods with you. It's horrible. What you really want to do in this situation is clean that thing out really well. Again, your betadine, 1 to 20 diluted betadine is a good thing to use, and then some sterile or clean water, drinking water again will be worked. Flush, flush, flush. The solution to pollution is dilution, so you just want to flush that stuff out. Then you want to use some kind of a sterile gauze or sterile pad. Telfa pad is a good one. And then wrap it up so there's pressure on the wound so it stops bleeding, or at least lets it clot. You know, antibiotics, painkillers, plus or minus sutures in the future, these are all things you're going to talk about with your vet. But for the meantime, while you're in the woods, you know, clean, compress, and then move to a vet if you think it's a really bad laceration. These are things that, you know, if you're 2 hours out in the woods, is easy enough to turn around and come back. If you're 4 days out in the woods, then you really got to think about what you're doing with your dog out there. The basic hiking kit that I would bring when I walk with my dogs in the woods is usually some kind of bandage, you know, vet wrap or cling wrap, something that can adhere to itself. That way you're not looking for tape and you're not using those little butterflies on ACE bandages. That's not ideal. Telfa or no stick pads. These are those pads you can buy at CVS or wherever you can go and get them at any pharmacy. They're like sterile pads that don't stick or adhere to wounds. Diluted betadine, which is a 1 to 20, is a good one. Betadine is too harsh by itself. We usually want to dilute it so it looks like a dilute iced tea. That's just the way it looks. If you put it in water and you're trying to figure out what 1 to 20 is, make sure it looks like a dilute iced tea. That's enough betadine. That's gonna kill most everything. Sterile water or saline, you can use eye flush or eye wash. They come in those little squirt bottles. That's perfect. Or just keep some clean water with you. A small syringe or a bulb that you can flush a wound and really get some real pressure into the wound just to flush it. This is a pack. This should be like no bigger than a fanny pack. You can put all that in a fanny pack. And then ice, you know, a breakable cold compress or just ice from your beer cooler, because you're probably hiking with one of those. But these are the things that you're going to want to hike with, and it'll take care of both the snake bites and the pad lacerations with just what you got until you see a veterinarian or an emergency room to get them properly treated. The last question that Valerie had, which is CPR in dogs and cats, it's a little more complicated. So CPR is something that we see a lot of on TV. In fact, there's a YouTube video of some trainer doing CPR on his boxer that collapsed, and he brings the dog back, and within 30 seconds, and it's running through the field. This is not real. CPR used to be taught as an ABC, which was airway, breathing, circulation. Now they're moving it towards CAB, which is circulation, airway, and breathing. More or less the same thing. The keys to dog CPR is if something happens and you feel like your dog has had a cardiac episode or is arrested or has gone into fibrillation or is laying flat and not responsive, stay calm. There's nothing you can do while you're in hysterics. Stay calm. Call for help. And it's the same in humans. The very first thing they teach you is call 911 or call for help. But in the veterinary field, what you want to do is call your veterinarian or the emergency room and let them know that you are coming, because they can prepare a crash cart, they can prepare oxygen, resuscitative drugs, whatever they need, but call them and let them know you're coming. And the third thing is rush to a vet office. You're going to want to scoop that dog up and rush to the vet office. There are stories of people doing CPR on their dogs and it being successful, but let me give you a couple statistics. Nationwide, the generally accepted success rates for CPR in dogs is 4% in vet offices. That means that 4 out of 100 dogs that have CPR in a vet office survive. It's 10% in cats. Now, these, I think, are generous. To be honest, I think that it's probably 1% to 2% of those animals ever go home. So although that 4% and 10% can survive the initial CPR, they don't ever leave the vet office. That's a pretty low statistics. That's just not a good success rate. So unless the specific cause for arrest is something like choking on something that's blocking the breathing way of the dog, or decreased blood glucose, or an anesthesia reaction, or a drug reaction that can be reversed, or head trauma, something that can be fixed, these animals have serious biological conditions that lead to their having an arrest. And it's not like they eat a whole bunch of fried food and have coronary artery disease, which may be a little easier to reverse. These are serious problems in these animals. The other thing is, in the ER, when you're getting 4%, you get using drugs like epinephrine, you're using atropine, you're using EKG leads, you may be using paddles. In the field, if you're walking and your dog collapses, your success rate's much, much lower without the special drugs and IV lines and things like that. So I don't usually recommend people perform CPR on their own in their yard. I usually recommend they scoop the dog up and try to get to the vet office within 5 or 6 minutes. That's your kind of window of opportunity. We in the vet office, in the ER, I can only speak for our own office in Greenbrier, we make every patient and client sign a CPR form. And what that is it lets us know if we're going to perform CPR on your dog. A lot of people take a 1% to 4% success rate as something that they are willing to try, and we commend them on that. You know, we explain that the success rate is low, but we offer it, and 1% to 4% is better than 0% to 0%. So if you're in our office and you have a dog with a serious condition, we may ask you to sign a CPR form. There's a monetary amount of money that usually goes along with CPR, and we want you to recognize that and recognize the potential low success rate. The best thing to do, in my mind, is scoop and run. Pick these dogs up, get in your car, phone ahead, go to the vet office. And just on that boxer video, if you YouTube it, you know, the chances are this boxer has a cardiac condition which is either causing a syncope, which means the boxer collapses and is going to get up on his own anyway, or it's got a cardiomyopathy syndrome where boxers can be easily stimulated back, but this dog has a major heart problem. And it's a boxer condition. It's just a YouTube video that's misleading. If you go to Google and Google CPR in vets or CPR in dogs, you'll find most of those pages agree that it's a very low success rate and probably should not be tried at home. So that's kind of bad news on the CPR front. But I do want to thank again Valerie for submitting these questions on our Facebook page. It's probably the best forum for submitting these questions. And if you have any others that you want addressed, now if we're inundated with 300 questions, it might be hard to get all of them. I hope we are. But I would say, you know, if you've got any questions, come to our Facebook page. It's Greenbrier Emergency on Facebook. It's the one that has our logo. There's about four Facebook pages that seem to be like blank ones. I don't know what Facebook's doing, but. Come visit our website. This podcast will be up there, as will blogs on other topics, and I hope you find these informative. It's www.greenbrier-emergency.com. Thanks.